You're listening to the Sincerely Samantha podcast, the show that brings you topics on self-care, mental health, and personal journeys with your host, Samantha Stacey.
Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome to the Sincerely Samantha podcast. I am your host, Samantha Stacey, and I'm just excited that you decided to chime in today. And thank you very much for your support. So if you are new to the podcast, again, my name is Samantha. I am a registered nurse. I currently work in aesthetics in Red Deer, Alberta at Hebe Beauty Bar. So I currently do full face rejuvenation. I do Botox fillers, if you're unaware of those products, for anti-aging. And I also was a mental health nurse for over 10 years, and I worked in acute mental health for adults and seniors mental health. Never dabbled in children's mental health, wasn't really my area. Kids are just so vulnerable. I mean, we all are, but I just felt that children's would have been too hard on my little soul to take on. But yeah, so mostly in adult mental health, fair bit experience there. And so with that being said, it is the month of May, so I wanted to focus the next couple of episodes on mental health and mental health awareness, as it is Mental Health Awareness Month. So the episode's going to be fairly short and sweet, nothing super long, but I do think it's important that we have a discussion on resources and what there is out in our community to help people who are maybe struggling right now, or maybe you know a loved one who might be struggling with some mental health concerns. And so I wanted to kind of start out with a couple statistics, which I did take from the Government of Canada website. They're fairly up to date. I think 2019 was the latest statistic, but I just wanted to start with that just to really drive home how important mental health is for us and how so many of us are affected by it, whether it's personally or with a loved one. So as of right now with the Government of Canada, it does say that 1 in 8 Canadians actually suffer from depression or a mood disorder. And it is actually more common in females than men. So it is 2 to 1 when it comes to depression and mood disorders. Another really good statistic that I liked was that out of that 1 in 8, 1 in 4 of those Canadians will need treatment at some point in his or her lifetime. And the average for this is actually 15 to 24 year olds. So that really vulnerable state in our life when things are very difficult and there's just so much new, right? Everything's new. You know, you're 15 to 24. I feel like, you know, you're getting a driver's license, you're going into high school, and then you're, you know, potentially leaving home, graduating. There's just so much change within those years. So I 100% can understand why the 15 to 24 range is very high risk. However, I mean, we are all definitely at risk and are always going through change constantly. So, but yeah, so I wanted to just touch base on some of those statistics, as I do find that they're, you know, quite high. And I think it's important that we understand as a society how important it is to have empathy and how important it is to just be there and listen to anyone who we feel like may be, you know, having a hard time. And I feel leaving COVID and getting out of COVID, a lot of us, you know, we did all struggle. I struggled. I mean, I definitely had a hard time in COVID. I just buried myself in work. Being a nurse at that time, I was working in an acute psych facility. So not only was I only able to be at home or at work, I was also just surrounded by people in crisis. And, you know, as much as like I was there to help them, there is also a point where you have to step back and you need to recognize that you also need to help yourself. So very important to, when we talk about subjects like this with people struggling and loved ones struggling, that we always remember that we too could be struggling and we need to take a beat and recognize that and make sure that we're not only trying to help our friends and family, but we're also trying to help ourselves. So I wanted to just talk about a couple things because I do think sometimes when I'm working in this field, I worked in mental health, that I take for granted that people don't actually realize what is out there for them. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the Alberta Mental Health Act and what acute crisis would look like and what non-urgent would look like and what we can do for ourselves or for loved ones in those situations. So I'm going to touch base on that crisis stage. So when I say that, what I'm talking about essentially is when yourself or a loved one is hit the point where they can no longer manage their life, their day-to-day tasks at home. And it's reached a point where, you know, maybe they'd been coping, but then it's hit a point where they're like, they just can't cope anymore. And potentially the only intervention at that time may actually be hospital, unfortunately. And of course, you know, we would love to have been able to put in, you know, safety nets and been able to help them before they reach that point. But sometimes, you know, I feel like a lot of us realize we're really good as people with hiding what's going on inside. And we can sometimes be really good at not letting people in. And I'm going to talk a little bit about stigma and why that is a little bit later. But regardless, you know, I feel like no one should ever feel guilty or, you know, bad about themselves if a friend or a loved one or yourself hits that crisis point where potentially hospital is the only solution, because it can happen and people can hide things, but not even that. It's just things can escalate very, very quickly and things can be triggering. So never feel bad about that if it gets to that point. That's why we have facilities in place to take care of ourselves and our loved ones. So we just do the best that we can. So with that being said, when we have someone in crisis, there is essentially three main methods to have them assessed by a psychiatrist at a facility specific for mental health concerns. So the first step would be, if you or yourself are in that crisis or a loved one, going to your local emergency department can be a first step. That would be somebody who is willing to seek help. If that is yourself or your loved one, and you can go into the emergency department. And something that not everybody knows that's really cool is most emergency departments have actually a crisis response team. So these would be individuals like counselors, nurses, sometimes social workers that are there specifically for those clients that are coming in because things are too bad at home or they're just unable to cope with whatever's going on. So these people are in the ER. Yes, I understand the ER can suck. It can be a long wait, but there is people there that are specific for that area, not just, you know, you break your toe or, you know, you hit your head, whatever. There's people there that are there for your mental health. So that would be your first step. And when you go into the ER, you can get seen by those people that are specialized in that area. They can decide if you need to see a doctor. If they believe that you are at the point where in hospital is the only choice of action, then they would tell the physician to see you and maybe have you admitted at that hospital. But cool thing is sometimes, you know, they're able to de-escalate whatever's going on with you. Sometimes they can't, that's okay. But sometimes they can, and then they can set you up with some really cool resources in your community so that maybe you don't have to stay in hospital. And for some people, staying in hospital is best, and for some people, it's not. So you have to take your own path. Another way to have someone seen and assessed by a psychiatrist, again, we're talking about crisis scenario, would be anyone can actually go in front of a judge, which kind of sounds a little bit scary when you think about it, but the intention is good. So anyone can go up to a judge and appeal for what we call a Form 8, and that is called a judge's warrant. And so, for instance, say you have a loved one that is, you know, not doing well, they have not been doing well for a long time, maybe they've been having some really harmful thoughts, maybe they've even acted on those harmful thoughts, and you just don't feel comfortable or safe knowing that they're maybe alone, they don't have the supports that they need, and they're not doing well. You could go and appeal and have a judge's warrant formed so that the police would actually go and pick them up and bring them to hospital. It doesn't mean that they're going to be put in the hospital to stay. It just means that they're going to be brought for an assessment. So another thing I think people get really scared because they're, you know, they're worried, you know, police come, and I understand police are scary for sure, but it is coming from best intention, and it doesn't mean that they're going to get in hospital. It might just mean that they're going to get seen and assessed, and maybe that assessment won't be hospital, but maybe it'll lead them to, you know, getting on some medication, or maybe it'll lead them to a referral with a therapist, or that psychiatrist will follow up with them and see them. So it doesn't even have to mean getting them on meds. That doesn't have to be number one. It doesn't even mean getting them in hospital. It means that they were seen. And your step that you could take, if say they won't go to the ER and say, you know, you don't want to go to a judge, and the situation is really dire, like say a friend messages you, things are not doing well, they said that they're having really harmful thoughts, they don't feel safe, and say you're not in a situation where you can, you know, be with them and try to keep them safe, and they don't have family and you don't know what to do, you can actually call the police. Again, I know that that's super scary and I understand that, but it's there for safety and for your own peace of mind to make sure that they're going to be okay. And again, this isn't something that you would do just because, you know, an impulsive reason. This is because you're really actually scared of someone's safety because you don't think that they're going to be safe. So police can come and they can actually do an assessment, and they have criteria that they have to stick with for their assessment to decide if they need to take them to hospital. So in the end, each way will always bring them into an emergency department. And at that emergency department, like I said earlier, hopefully, unless it's a rural hospital, because some hospitals, you know, they don't have as many resources, but city hospitals for sure, they do have a crisis response team. They will see you or your loved one and be able to talk to you about what's going on, and they can decide what the best course of action is. And like I said, not always hospitalization, not always medication. Sometimes it's just a community health worker, somebody to set you up with the skills and coping that you need, or just that support you need, because not everybody has someone that they can call and talk about what's going on with. And then sometimes they've already, you know, they've used up that person too much and their mental health is now declining. So they need somebody outside the situation, like a therapist, to intervene and be able to talk to them. So those are all crisis. So like I said, this is where someone, you really think that something bad might happen. Like they may be in immediate danger. They are unable to take care of themselves. Things have escalated to the point that you don't feel good about what's going on. And that can be for yourself or for them. So in the case of non-urgent, so, you know, maybe we're not doing really well, life is hard, work hasn't been good, it's winter because, you know, Canadian winters are tough, and you're just not getting that vitamin D and you're feeling really low. But, you know, it's not to the point where you're having harmful thoughts. It's not to the point where you're not getting up and going to work. But things are just really hard and you're not sure how much longer you can continue. So then there is things that are non-urgent, resources. And I'm going to just stick with kind of where I am. So I'm in Red Deer, Alberta, Canada. And so everywhere has different resources. So it's a quick Google search and you can usually find what you need in your local community. But say for Red Deer, for instance, with Alberta Health Services. So if we're sticking with AHS, there is a drop-in center at 49th Street in Red Deer for drop-in counseling services. So this would be your non-urgent, you know, things aren't doing good, but you need somewhere to start. That is one place you could start. Another, if you're younger, and again, my expertise is absolutely not youth and adolescent, but I do know that there is a drop-in youth at Vantage Community Services, which is an amazing place. And if you're looking for a therapist and you don't want to go to the drop-in at AHS, but you want to have your own therapist, you want to see the same person, Vantage has really, really good resources out there. So I definitely would say to look them up. But they do have a drop-in youth service, and it's called Street Ties Youth Outreach, which is really, really cool. I don't know a ton about it, but I do know it's for youth specifically. And since I know that community resource is so good, I'm assuming it's so good. So, you know, we also have to remember that our youngins are suffering too. So those would be really good non-urgent things that we can take care of for ourselves. There is also lots of Canadian resources for non-urgent and urgent, where you don't even have to leave your home. So there is a mental health helpline that is a 1-800 number. There's also a Talk Suicide Canada line. There's a Kids Health phone line, Indigenous, National Trans, and then there's also 211 Alberta, which 211 Alberta will help you get connected with programs that are within your community if you're an Alberta member. So lots of cool resources for if you don't even want to leave your home, but you need that first step and you need to talk to somebody, or you know a loved one that's struggling and you want to give them that number. So I'm going to attach the phone numbers for all of those services that I just mentioned on the description of today's podcast. But essentially what I wanted to get through with today is just having you know that A, you're not alone. You know, like I said, 1 in 8 are, you know, that's just depression and mood. That's not looking at everything else. And then secondly, just knowing that, you know, you have to take care of yourself, but when someone else is struggling, it can be really hard to know what to do. And, you know, sometimes they'll let you help and then sometimes they don't let you. What I think is really important too is to remember that if someone is reaching out to you and they feel comfortable enough to share what they're going through and their experience, that it's really important that, you know, we take that quite seriously. And I think the biggest reason is because, I mean, there's many reasons. I'm just segueing into stigma. So a big reason would be stigma, because a lot of people are scared and they're reluctant. And there was a survey done on Canadians that 75% of respondents said that they would be reluctant or even refuse to talk about having mental illness to another, and that they're 3 times more likely to disclose a physical illness like, say, cancer versus anything like mental illness. An example was depression. So the big reason why that they were scared to, you know, and reluctant to even share this information is because of the stigma. And the top reasons are just because of the belief that there is stigma around mental health. You know, people still think, you know, that there's something wrong with that, when we know for a fact that there's nothing wrong with that. We are allowed to, you know, struggle sometimes. Life is tough, and we have to be, you know, we have to be graceful with ourselves and others. Another reason why is because they think that they're going to be treated differently or judged. And they're also afraid of any negative consequences. Like, if you know you might share with someone else and, you know, that you may not be supportive. So I think it is important that if someone does reach out to you because they're struggling, that, you know, we have that empathy and grace, and, you know, we listen is, I think, the most important thing. And then once it becomes, or if it becomes something that's, you know, a little too much for us, we have to identify that. And then we have to know what resources there are to send them to, so that, you know, they still continue to get that support. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I did want to keep it kind of short and sweet. It might be a bit of a heavy subject and it might hit really hard for some of us. So I hope that this was informative and educational. And if you are having a hard time out there, I hope you know you're not alone. And please, you know, reach out to loved ones or reach out to professionals. Whatever you think you need, make sure you take the time to take care of yourself. So happy Mental Health Awareness Month, and we will chat and catch up next week.
Thank you for listening to Sincerely Samantha.